Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, environmentalist groups plan to sue Atlanta over pollution in the Flint River. Metro Atlanta's 13th Congressional District is headed to a runoff, and Macon-Bibb County has broken ground on a new arena.
Your children, yes, your grandchildren, deserve to make those same memories that we've had. They need to be made in a building that's built for them.
Today is Wednesday, July 29th. I'm Peter Biello, and this is Georgia Today. Tomorrow morning, Colin Gray, the father of convicted school shooter Colt Gray, will appear in court to be sentenced for providing the rifle his son used in a school shooting at Appalachie High School. GPB's Chase McGee has more.
In March, Colin Gray was convicted on more than two dozen charges, including two counts of second-degree murder and two counts of involuntary manslaughter in the deaths of two teachers and two students. This case is one of a handful in the U.S. where parents have faced convictions for their role in a child's crimes using a weapon, and the first in the state of Georgia. In a press conference after son Colt Gray's sentencing on Tuesday, Barrow County District Attorney Brad Smith said Colin could face as little as time served or a maximum of 180 years. After the sentencing, Gray could appeal, which would be heard before the Supreme Court of Georgia. Barrow County students return to school starting this Friday. For GPB News, I'm Chase McGee.
Tuesday's special election in Metro Atlanta's 13th Congressional District is headed to a runoff, GPB's Sarah Callis reports.
Marcy Scott and Everton Blair, both Democrats, advanced to the runoff in the five-person race, where no candidate cleared the 50% threshold to win outright. Scott is the late Congressman David Scott's daughter. She announced she was running to fill the remainder of her father's term shortly after his death. Blair is a former Gwinnett County School Board chair who also ran in the Democratic primary for a full term in the 13th District, but lost to State Representative Jasmine Clark. The runoff will be held August 25th, and the winner will only hold office until the beginning of January. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis.
Environmental groups are preparing to sue the city of Atlanta over what they call years of legal pollution from Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport into the Flint River. GPB's Pamela Kirkland has the details.
In a notice sent Wednesday, the Southern Environmental Law Center and Flint River Keeper allege the airport has repeatedly discharged fuel, sewage, PFAS, or forever chemicals, and other pollutants into the river and nearby creeks. The notice follows GPB's reporting documenting three petroleum spills that reached the Flint River this year, including a Memorial Day leak caused by a broken bolt on an underground fuel line. The groups must wait at least 60 days before filing their federal Clean Water Act claims. The city of Atlanta did not immediately respond to a request for comment. For GPB News, I'm Pamela Kirkland.
The Georgia Chamber wants Georgia businesses to be ready for possible U.S. tariffs on products from Canada. The Chamber's foundation yesterday released guidance ahead of new Trump administration duties set to come into effect on August 19th. The report says Canada is the state's fourth largest trading partner with construction, food processing, and beverage distribution among industries that could be affected. The Center for Reproductive Rights and other advocacy groups are raising awareness this week about legislation impacting infertility care options for families, GPB's Ellen Eldridge reports.
In Georgia, the ability to build a family often comes down to what you can afford and whether your insurance covers in vitro fertilization. A single round of IVF can cost $30,000. That's according to Jory Dugan with the Human Rights Council. She says bills introduced over the state's last two legislative sessions mandating public and private insurance coverage for IVF did not move forward.
And we've seen the benefit in other states where we've had the opportunity to make sure that the insurance mandates are inclusive and comprehensive, really ensure that people can build their families and families can flourish.
Dugan says advocates hope lawmakers will soon support IVF legislation that mandates insurance coverage for care. For GPB News, I'm Ellen Eldridge.
Officials in Macon-Bibb County have broken ground on a new arena on the city's east side. The current Macon Coliseum, which opened in 1968, saw concerts by artists like Elvis Presley, Michael Jackson, and Willie Nelson, and has also long been host to most of the state's high school basketball tournaments. At the groundbreaking ceremony today, Macon-Bibb Mayor Lester Miller said it was where he graduated from high school, college, and law school.
Your children, yes, your grandchildren, was there to make those same memories that we've had. They need to be made in a building that's built for people.
The $350 million Macon Coliseum is expected to be open in 2028. Our homes are more than just pieces of real estate. They shape who we are. They reflect our hopes and our personalities. And when we leave a home behind, it can become a significant place in our memories, a place we want to return to, both physically and in our imaginations. Such is the case for Georgia Poet Laureate Chelsea Rathburn, whose new collection of poetry looks back on moments in her life through the various places she's lived. It's called Broken Houses, and she's with me in the studio to talk about it. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about the origins of Broken Houses. Did you set out to write on this theme, or were you writing poems, and did the theme kind of emerge?
Both and neither.
Both and neither, okay.
Anyway, it's complicated. My last book was about motherhood and childhood, and at the very end of that book, I had written a poem about my father's terrible childhood, which normally he would tell this story that would begin, oh, you think your childhood was bad? Well, your parents never did, and he had this awful story about going away to summer camp, and his parents moved away while he was at camp, and he was dropped off to an empty house. And I was thinking about that story, my dad's childhood, and the ways that real estate and houses loomed really large when I was growing up. My family, both my parents grew up extremely poor, and then money was just always incredibly tight. When I was small, we lived in a series of really dismal apartments, and then my parents, through the help of a VA loan, they kind of squeaked their way into a house in Miami, and we were always worried that something was going to happen and we were going to lose the house.
You write about your mother here as well in some of these poems. One of them I liked. I liked a lot of them, but one that I really found moving was In Miniature. That's the one where she orders a dollhouse for you, and it doesn't come assembled like the pretty dollhouse you saw in the advertisement or in the store window. I can't remember which. And the finished product has like glue dripping down because you tried so hard to put this thing together. And it's a moment where you're looking back and appreciating what your mother has done for you. Can you talk a little bit about that poem?
Yeah. I gave a reading recently. I was teaching in Krakow, Poland, doing a study abroad. My mother happened to come and visit when I was giving a poetry reading, and I read that poem and just said, you know, I'm so sorry, Mom. I'm so sorry. But yeah, my mother was a preschool teacher. So we spent a lot of time in craft stores and, you know, teacher school supply stores and things. And we would go to this arts and crafts store, and I just coveted this one dollhouse that was on display. You know, it was so beautiful. And I had these visions of, you know, what it would look like in my room. And never made the connection that it would come unassembled. And my poor mother, I think I said in the poem, you know, who didn't ask for this? She didn't ask for this. This wasn't her dream, right? But she was the one who, you know, would organize all of those little pieces of birch wood and hot glue everything. We painted, we wallpapered. It was hours and hours and hours. And in the poem, I'm thinking about just the ways that, you know, our dreams and wishes and expectations, they don't always... The reality doesn't always live up to those, but that there's a kind of kindness that we do for one another as family. You know, I never complained that the dollhouse wasn't exactly didn't match up to my dreams, but I think my mother probably knew that.
Yeah, you're both there. You're both aware of it, but you're not saying it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're both, I think, trying to enjoy the moment to the extent that you can.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that sentiment that you both brought to the moment, I think, made it sweet,
mm-hmm.
right? And there's another poem that you mentioned your mother. I'd like to have you read it for us. It's the one that's called The Flattened Crusts, The White Skins Seeping.
That is such an ornate ornate title for very...
There's a balance here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is, I still don't understand my impulse. This is a true story, which is that there was a period of time in elementary school. I think I was in maybe second grade, according to the poem. Sometimes my poems remember more than I do. But in second grade, I just decided that I hated eating these peanut butter sandwiches and I didn't want to tell anyone. And so I kept bringing them to school for weeks. So this is called The Flattened Crusts, The White Skins Seeping. I'd like to think it was a stomach flu, something I could not help, that turned me against my mother's peanut butter sandwiches. But after months of identical bagged lunches, I renounced them at once and absolutely. I knew it was wrong to throw good food away, so I made a project out of ruining them, sliding the sandwiches beneath one leg, then the other, until they thinned and fissured. Such quiet violence. And I could return to my second grade classroom, my stomach growling. This went on for weeks until the guilt became too much to bear. When I confessed, weeping, my mother did not remind me how she walked to school hungry, how she whispered, "free lunch," to the cashier so no one else would know, how she said it so quietly the cashier could not hear her, or pretended not to hear her, making her repeat, free lunch, louder, louder, louder. Instead, my mother hugged me and sent me back to school with tuna fish.
That was such a sweet moment. She could have been outraged, right? She could have been thinking back to her own childhood and been mad about it, but she wasn't. She approached it with love.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very. My mom's really great.
One of the poems in this book made my skin crawl. I won't make you read it, but I will read the title. And the title is, "Poem I Wish to Title with the Species Name of My Least Favorite Palmetto Bug, But Can't Because There Are So Many Candidates or Another Invasion." I will say, we live in the South here, below the palmetto bug line, which I learned recently was a thing. And I will never put shoes on in the exact same way. That's all I'll say about that poem. But man, you really know how to get under someone's skin in a poem, I'll say.
I'm sorry. That's a tough one. I really love that poem. And I probably shouldn't read this out loud if I'm at a reading, just because it does have that ick factor.
Well, let me ask you, you've been poet laureate since 2019. Mm-hmm. What's the most recent official duty as poet laureate that you've carried out?
The most recent, the something that I do every year that I really absolutely love is I judge a statewide high school poetry contest. And it was founded by my predecessor, Judson Mitchum. And basically we invite students 9th through 12th grade, public school, private school, homeschool, it's open to anybody. Mm-hmm. And the poems can be any theme. We have length requirements, but we choose a winner. I choose a winner and four finalists, and schedule permitting, the governor's schedule permitting, we have a celebration at the Capitol and the students get to meet the governor, and it's really special.
Yeah. That sounds really nice.
Yeah. I love it. It's,
is that your favorite part of being poet laureate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Working with the kids.
Yeah. Working with the kids. So many of them are just really incredible. Mm-hmm. It's very, always very hard to choose a winner. But it really just gives me a sense of, just the incredible variety of voices and, things that Georgian young people are interested in. It's great.
Well, Georgia Poet Laureate Chelsea Rathburn, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thanks for having me.
And we will be discussing Broken Houses on Narrative Edge, GPB's podcast about books with Georgia connections. Find and subscribe to Narrative Edge wherever you get your podcasts and watch it on YouTube. Summer is anything but downtime for Atlanta Symphony Orchestra music director Natalie Stutzmann. Last week, she and they released a new album featuring a Bruckner symphony. She's conducting a high-profile Wagner opera in Germany and taking the reins as music director of the Monte Carlo Philharmonic. And as she gears up for her fifth season with the ASO, she spoke with GPB's Sarah Zaslaw about the ASO's focus on Brahms this season.
I think it's a composer which audience, of course, know, but I have the feeling that playing a full cycle of his music will give a different perspective to people about the diversity of his music.
Stutzman also talked about her relationship with the ASO and Chorus, arts funding models, and the stamina that an in-demand conductor's life requires. You can hear that entire interview right now at gpb.org/news. And that is it for this edition of Georgia Today. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you'll come back tomorrow. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast so you remember to do that. And visit gpb.org/news for any updates to the stories you heard today. Now, if there's something happening in your community that we should know about, or if you have feedback on this podcast, send it to us by email. The address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks again for listening. We will see you tomorrow.